Quiet Circle. I'm your course coordinator, Steve Prusak. It's great to have you with us tonight. As always, your membership site is now updated with the November 2012 resource, so you can download that at any time if you are a member of the Circle. So thank you, and let's welcome to the call right now our host, Dr. Will Tuttle.
Great. Thank you, Steve. I really am delighted to be on the call here. It's November 15th, 2012. Wow, years go by, don't they? And it's just, I think, again, the momentum continues to build in a variety of ways for the message of compassion for animals and the World Peace Diet message, really the message of veganism and universal love to continue to spread, even though obviously there are major pushbacks happening as well. But I'd like to begin our time for this call by just taking a moment and encouraging all of us, if you can, wherever you happen to be and whatever else you're doing, to just pause and feel our connection at the heart with each other and with this beautiful planet, with the trees and the forests, with the animals celebrating their lives here, with all of the future generations that are looking to us, and the past generations also, and the co-workers around the world. There's so many people who are devoting their lives to making an effort to understand more deeply the ramifications of our treatment of animals and to somehow bring their lives into greater alignment with their values of kindness and compassion for all life, and to help to bring this message to other people too by living it and by finding creative ways to contribute to an awakening of human consciousness out of the massive indoctrination that we've all gone through growing up here. So we give thanks for this gathering tribe of heartfelt, connected people, and I think it's also good to remember that the animals themselves are contributing in their own way too, that they're in their own ways, I think very often speaking in dreams or in visions or directly to human beings to help people to awaken. And I've met a lot of people who have said that. And I've experienced that somewhat myself, and probably a lot of you have as well. So to remember that we're part of an enormously benevolent, beautiful universe, that we are all living lives that are not necessarily easy. This can be perhaps the most challenging time of the year we're moving into here with Thanksgiving and everything. But it's also so sweet and great to be alive, to be able to contribute to some kind of a healing, and to grow ourselves as well. I think that's really a big part of it, too. For each one of us to find more depth and clarity and understanding and awareness within our own experience and consciousness so that our words connect with our intuition, with a deeper wisdom, and that our actions also, so that we come up with more and more creative and helpful ways of blessing the world. So that's the idea here. I want to thank all of you again for making the enormous efforts I know all of you are making and have made to get to the point where you're actually on this call together. It means questioning almost everything, really, that we've been taught growing up here. And knowing that, but moving beyond just saying, okay, I'm going to be a vegan, I'm not going to contribute to the suffering of the animals as best I can anyway, by not buying products and so forth and entertainment, but also having a yearning to help bring this message to other people as well. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things that we can do on this planet. There's so much suffering here. 75 million animals, billions of animals, 75 million a day just in the United States, and billions worldwide per year, as we know. And so the human species is, it's past time for us to begin to evolve in a more positive direction. And so it's just great to know that we're in this together and that you're with us on this call. And so what we're planning on doing this call is speaking with a few people. We have this our wonderful ally in the cause here, Steve Prusak, is going to be speaking some more about some of what he's learned over the years in bringing the vegan message to the world primarily through the internet, which is emerging as a really great tool for spreading the message. But before that, we were thinking we would talk with another long-time ally and friend in the cause, Judy Carman. And so we have her on the line, too. She's from Kansas. And then we'll have, we'll try not to go too long with these two. We want to make sure we have time for questions, for comments, for your input. We also are looking forward to hearing from Lily Macy from Northern California as well, who's also a longtime Low Peace Diet ally and friend, and Mark Strapp from Cincinnati as well is on the call with us. So, and all of you folks, obviously, if you have any question or comment at any point, we just really love to respond. So just remember, all you need to do is press *2 on your phone, and we will see it here on our screen. And we will be, as soon as we can, we'll get to you. Or if you're listening to this through your computer, there's a place where you can just ask questions there, type them in, and we'll do it that way. So we'd love to hear from you, as I was saying. So let's go ahead and start with Judy. And Judy is, as I said, from Kansas and an old, longtime friend. She's the co-founder with me and Madeline of the Circle of Compassion Ministry. We have a 501c3 nonprofit organization now that is dedicated to spreading the message of compassion. And we have, as part of that, the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals. So if anyone's interested, you can just go to circleofcompassion.org and find out more. Tara, who's gone through the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training Program, is helping us quite a bit with that. And we have every week Judy writes something that goes out to everybody. It's totally free, complimentary kind of service. But you can put your name on the map if you'd like. And the idea is that every day at noon we pause and say the prayer, which is basically to connect our consciousness together with others and with the larger consciousness to create a field of compassion for animals and for all life. It's the basic prayer is that is compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And so Judy is the author of two wonderful books, and one is called Peace to All Beings, and the other one is called The Missing Piece. She's also very active in and has been in the animal rights movement in Kansas, especially around Lawrence, Kansas, which is sort of the most progressive part of Kansas, I think. And also with setting up a vegan group there and working in a variety of ways over the years. So I'd like to go ahead and just welcome Judy to the call. Hi there, Judy. Are you with us?
I will. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I hear you just fine. Great. All right. So, basically, as you know, we're gathered together. Everyone who's on the call is interested in spreading the vegan message and doing it not just from the point of view of something that's merely, say, political or social or justice-oriented, which those are all important, but also bringing in the spiritual dimension as well, or the dimension of the deeper level of who we are as human beings, And it's so great to have you with us because your interest is really in that, I know. And I was just wondering if you could talk to everyone just briefly here a little bit about your own background, how you, what you've been doing lately, the two books that you've written, and what the focus of those books are, and how you think that prayers and spirituality, you know, relate to our treatment of animals.
Okay, well, thanks. And I've got how much time? Because I could take several hours today.
Yeah, I know, it's huge. But I was just thinking, you know, maybe
five
or 10 minutes, something like that. Just.
Yeah, it's a big, big subject. And the books that I wrote, I think maybe my most important reason for writing them was to encourage all of us to show the spiritual dimension of animal rights work. And because that not only helps round it out so that we see this, that we're working on all different levels, physical, legislative, emotional, but also spiritual, because this is really a spiritual battle that we're in to change the fear in the world and overcome it with love. And but so that was one reason, but then the other reason was to encourage all of us who are on a spiritual path and also involved in animal rights and other justice issues, because it takes a lot out of us to do this kind of work. And there's a lot of heartbreak, there's a lot of witnessing of atrocities towards animals that we can't even believe sometimes what we're hearing or seeing. And we need each other, and we need a prayer life and a spiritual anchor to keep us going, because it's not an easy path, but once you get on it, you can't turn back. So
because
you've seen the truth, and and so you need strength to keep going. And so I've had a lot of people tell me that they keep the book, the Peace to All Beings book especially, next to their bedside to read a little bit before they go to sleep, to kind of, you know, okay, I can get up and do some more tomorrow, because there is a tendency to burn out when you're dealing with this kind of news that we hear day in and day out about what's going on. And you were talking a little bit about what I'm doing kind of on the ground here in Kansas, and our latest campaign was to try to get two elephants out of the Topeka Zoo. And we just found out several weeks ago the city council voted to support the zoo director who wants to keep the elephants there. And this was a 5-year campaign that we waged to get the elephants out of there and into the elephant sanctuary in Tennessee, which, if anybody wants to look that up, it's elephants.com. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful place. If you haven't heard of it yet, it's just wonderful just to go to the website and hear some of the stories, pictures. And that was what we wanted. That was our dream for Tembo and Sunda, to finally be able to go there and have a taste of freedom in their old age, because one of them is, Tembo is 46 and Sunda is 56.
Right.
And so, yeah, it was a long campaign, and we put up billboards and had town meetings and talked till we were blue in the face, as they say, to the city council, And while we were blue in the face, they were blank faced.
Right.
And as it heated up and we got closer and closer to a decision-making time, they began to tell lies, and which it's always shocking. you
yeah.
know it happens, but it always shocks you when it starts. And I think they kept thinking we would go away, and when we didn't, and we started bringing out more and more facts and discovering more and more problems by studying USDA records and medical records, they realized that they had a real, in their mind, an enemy on their hands. And since their facts, since we were telling the truth, the only thing they had left was to kill the messenger, so to speak, to, you know, make us either say that we were flatly lying or to try to denigrate our characters. And so even though we lived a few miles away from Topeka, where the zoo is, they were calling us outsiders, and we didn't have a right to tell them what to do and to try to harm their elephants by moving them out of there. And it got a little bit ugly, and we had tried to keep a very professional stance throughout the whole thing, you know, and asking city council members to meet with us and being very polite and respectful. So but it deteriorated towards the end as they became desperate. So that was interesting to see, and of course we see it all the time with environmental issues and
right.
any justice issue where it comes down to the bottom line, and they know that they're not telling the truth. They don't have anything left to do except attack the character of the wacko activists or whatever they want to call us. So, and that's an example of the kind of stress that an activist goes through, and emotional roller coaster and heartbreak. And because, you know, we really came to love those elephants and had this dream for them. And so I just want to encourage everybody out there, no matter what their issue is, that we can't always win each little battle or whatever you want to call it. But I know that there are thousands and thousands, maybe millions of people that heard about Tambo and Sunda, partly because of you, Will, and everybody getting the word out. And they got emails from all
right.
over the world. And even the paper even reported it several times
right.
of how annoyed they
yeah.
were by all
yeah,
the
yeah.
emails. And to me, that means that Tambo and Sunda have been uplifted by that. All that love that
right.
came their way, even though they didn't get their freedom,
they
have to have felt that. They're very sensitive animals and possibly way more intelligent than we are, maybe more
right.
psychic, you know?
Right.
We don't know,
sure.
but I just believe that they felt all
right.
of that love.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of evidence, really, that elephants know what's going on, even when they're
mm-hmm.
not there, that some of these recent things that have been happening, where that one fellow passed away, and the elephants
yeah.
within, you know, with 4 days journey away, and 4 days later they showed up after
right.
the journey to honor mm-hmm. His memory, it seemed
mm-hmm.
like. And I was just wondering, you know, you worked so hard to get these two elephants free, you put huge amounts of effort into that campaign. What do you think, like, for everybody who's listening here, you know, we're focusing on the vegan message, and this is certainly part of the vegan message, compassion for animals, that these poor elephants were confined in the most horrible cement floor, iron bar kind of enclosures for 40 years that, you know, not with just nothing and freezing weather and everything. But and they're being, so it's wonderful, obviously, that you work hard to try to get them a better place to live. Do you feel, though, that perhaps in some ways the energies could have been better used in vegan outreach, something like that? Do you think that's something for people to kind of weigh in some way, you know, what we're going to be doing here? You know, in the sense you're not, it's not something where you sort of win or lose. You just, every time someone goes more toward veganism, I always think it's a win. And maybe, you know, it saves thousands of lives, but it tends to be something that is more of the big ongoing effort. So I was just curious, like you and your people that you were working with directly there, did you talk about that afterwards in terms of future efforts?
Yes,
yeah.
It really, that was definitely something that concerned us, because most of our work centers around veganism. But also we have felt like, because we're the only animal rights group within many miles, that we needed to respond to other things. For example, we got circuses banned from our area, and we also got an anti-tethering bill passed so that you couldn't chain dogs.
Great.
For more than, you know, an hour and at a time. And there's a lot of, like the Humane Society would call and ask us to help them with, for example, the anti-chaining.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of people also around who are very concerned about circuses who wanted us to help with that. And so we tend to be all things to all people regarding animal issues, and including animal rescue and all of that sort of thing. So, but I think it kind of depends on your group focus. If you're a local group and you're staying local, then you may need to respond to some other issues that aren't strictly vegan. But in the process of doing that, you're going to run into a lot of non-vegans, especially at Humane Society, strangely enough,
right,
and have an influence on them. So while working with the Humane Societies and helping them with some of their issues, we made them watch Peaceable Kingdom and
right.
some other films, and exposed them to the idea of, oh, okay, dogs and cats are important, very important. We're willing to help you with that. But let's think about the cows and the pigs and all of
right.
those animals, too. And
right.
there's no difference there. And so hopefully, by being allies on one thing, you help them see that to be consistent in their love for animals, they really need to look at the vegan issue. And
right.
so, but now that the elephant issue is kind of behind us, and we'll continue to meet with the zoo director and
right.
you know, but our time won't be nearly as taken up with that issue. It became really pretty consuming there for a
yeah.
while. We can turn our attention more to our vegan outreach and
right.
our vegan
yeah, I remember,
picnic and all of that.
Right. One of the things I just want to mention to everybody that Judy did for a number of years, if I remember correctly, was on Friday nights you'd go down into the downtown Lawrence, Kansas, with this great little TV that your husband Michael had rigged up, run by a car battery,
right.
to show meet your meat and show eating. No, it wasn't eating. It was earthlings.
Earthlings.
And then just the people walking by, doing shopping on Friday night, or going out to the restaurants with their, their families and kids. And whereas before you started showing those, you were sort of leafleting and talking to people about the benefits of veganism. When you showed the videos, then they came to you and they wanted the leaflets. It was like they really wanted to find out what they could do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very touched the few times Madeline and I joined you for that, and how, you don't have to say anything. I mean, just the images really speak for themselves, and I think I'm sure you touched a lot of people with that.
Yeah, there's really nothing any more powerful than those images. And I think we did reach a lot of people that way, and it's definitely worth doing. It can't be done in the winter because on really cold nights, people won't stop. It's too cold, stop and stand there. But I understand that farm animal reform movement has a pay-per-view thing. And they will help people set a thing like that up. And then I'm not sure if Farm sends the money or what, but you pay people $1 to watch the film. And do you know anybody who's done that? I think it's a great idea.
Farm's doing that. And I know they've been doing it quite a bit in L.A. and other places. And basically, they've got a van that they use, but they also will, kind of work with local activists and help you financially with the money to, to give to people. But it's basically setting up in a library or in a school lobby or somewhere where people are going by. You set up some laptop computers and you just have a 12-minute video there's quite a few good ones that are, that really show what animals go through for food, and people are all eating, so they, this is something that they're directly involved with. And you say, I'll give you $1 to watch this video, and the results have been really, really good. I mean, a lot of positive. They've been tracking the results. People seem to really reduce the amount of meat they're eating. Some you can go vegan, vegetarian, or vegan, as a direct result, apparently, of that. So.
It's a great way to reach people, and it's worth every minute that it takes to set that up.
Right. Yeah. So that's Farm Animal Rights Movement. Farm. Just go. Everyone can find out. If you're interested, find out about that.
Yeah.
Thanks. That's a great idea. What are you going to be doing for Thanksgiving? Do you guys have any vegan Thanksgiving plans? And of course, I'd like to open that question up to everybody on the call. If you have anything kind of interesting for Thanksgiving in your community or whatever, just let us know. I think it's always good to hear.
Yeah.
This is one of the hardest times of the year, I think, for vegans is Thanksgiving. So you have to get together and...
Yeah, it's true. We've got a few people who are going to have Thanksgiving dinner, vegan Thanksgiving dinners here. I'm going to be leaving town to come out and see you guys. So, I'm going to miss the one here, but I encourage everybody to do that. Even if your family really needs you to be with them, you can always have your vegan Thanksgiving later in the day or... But we need each other very, very much to keep us going.
Yes.
And taste the good vegan food and not feel so left out. But another good thing people might think about doing is getting hold of that, what was that turkey, My Life as a Turkey?
Oh, that's
video.
A great video. Yeah, that's really very good. Yeah, My Life as a Turkey. Remember we watched that?
Yeah,
about a year ago, whenever it was when it came out. I think it was created by BBC. It's a true story of a fellow who adopted some turkeys. Basically, they bonded with him, but then they taught him about life in the woods.
Right.
In a lot of ways, it's very touching. Actually,
it is, and I think it's. even though you don't see any turkey slaughter scenes or hear anything about the atrocities against turkeys that are being raised for meat, if you showed it at Thanksgiving to your relatives, it might give them a sense that, hey, these are our fellow beings.
These are our
friends, and they have
emotions. And they have enormous wisdom. I mean, they really can.
Right.
It was amazing how tuned in they were to things that he wasn't.
Well, and just the idea, Karen Davis has a beautiful picture of a mother turkey with her babies under her wings. And this man had to be the mother, and how they cuddled up to him and needed him. And that, too, makes a person pause. Maybe I don't want to eat that beautiful creature. I was at a sanctuary a while back, and I got to hold a turkey in my arms, and they are precious beings in so many ways, and very loving.
If
they get the chance.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's something I definitely, Mel and I have found, and I highly recommend, if you know, if you haven't done it already, to visit one of the sanctuaries where these animals, pigs, cows, and chickens, and turkeys especially, and goats and sheep, rabbits are, you can get to see them a little bit as they would be, and still not quite the same as seeing them in the wild, which would be a lot better, but
mm-hmm.
actually, yeah, see, you know, rub their bellies and scratch them behind the ears and feed them grapes. Turkeys love grapes.
Mm-hmm.
I know, it's so great. Well, you know, Judy, we have quite a full program here this evening.
I know
it's
you
been
do.
Great. Yeah, it's
sounds
been so
wonderful.
Great to hear some of what you had to share with us.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Hi, Judy.
Hi, Madeline. Are you going to speak now?
No. I'm just listening to you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's Madeline and Judy are great friends. Well, I'd like to thank you and just invite everyone, if you haven't had a chance to get a copy of Judy's book, Peace to All Beings, or The Missing Piece. I'll just say briefly, Peace to All Beings is a book of prayers for animals. It's just prayers from many different traditions. Some of them Judy composed herself. Others of the prayers are from the Buddhist or the Native American or the Hindu or Christian traditions, Jewish traditions, many different traditions. And it's a nice book of really wonderful book of prayers. And you get the feeling of the universality of the human urge to bless animals, to be connected to their wisdom and innocence and understanding and so forth. And then the other book she wrote with Tina Volpe is a book called The Missing Piece, which really has stories. It's basically stories, first-person accounts of people who have gone from basically being asleep or eating the standard American diet and so forth to people who are now vegans and typically animal rights activists of some kind, and how there was some spiritual awakening that happened in their lives as part of their transition and part of their transformation to becoming vegans and vegan activists. And I think it's a wonderful contribution, really, to the whole literature of veganism, because it's really some great case studies of well-known people. Mel and I actually have something in there, Steve Hindi, Howard Lyman, as you call it, quite a few people. Lots of well-known people and lots of not well-known people, but people who have fascinating stories, slaughterhouse workers, housewives, many different types of people. And you can see how animals have touched people in a variety of ways, and also how people have been able to connect with their own spiritual dimension, and as part of that, just gave up eating animal foods. And it's very inspiring. I think it's a great book. And Judy has been unflagging in her effort. efforts to help animals. So it's been really inspiring to have you with us, Judy. Thanks so much.
Well, thank
you for joining us. And we also go ahead.
No, I was just saying I loved being on your show, and thanks for mentioning the books again. You can see them at my website, which is peacetoallbeings.com.
Right, peacetoallbeings.com and circleofcompassion.org. We have our prayer circle for animals and so forth if you're interested in seeing more about that.
Yeah, please join us in the prayer circle for animals. Very important.
Right, exactly,
okay.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Will.
All right, Judy. Thanks. Talk to you later. Take care. Bye-bye. Okay. So, I guess we can move on here. There's so much to talk about. We have this election we just had, of course, with I think everyone who supported Barack Obama was very glad at how things turned out. And I guess I don't want to get into the whole politics, but even though I guess from my point of view, it's been very disappointing to see how under the current president there's been an enormous increase in all the animal. A lot of the Interior Department is killing more animals than ever. It seems like we're really hoping for other things to happen, but I think compared to the alternative, it's great, and so. One of the big disappointments, though, I think, was the fact that supposedly Proposition 37 in California, the GMO Labeling Act, was defeated, although there's quite a bit of conversation on the Internet about the fact that there are millions of votes that still haven't even been counted. So these are just merely projections that still actually could have, Proposition 37 could actually have passed, and so we're hoping, I guess, that people will write to the Secretary of State, California, and count all the ballots before we say what happened. But it was really a testament, I think, to the enormous power of Monsanto, Nestle's, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, General Foods, and the big food, basically, $46 million were poured into that campaign to dissuade people from the most obvious thing that's in their best interest, which is to label these foods. And to me, it's part of the vegan, even though it's not directly vegan, I think it's really part of it. Number one, the whole mentality underlying animal agriculture is the mentality of the domination and exploitation of nature and animals. And GMO technology is a clear use of so-called science to dominate and manipulate and destroy not only the livelihoods of people, but the web of life on this earth to make profits for that benefit just a very tiny number of people. And it was very interesting to me to see how viciously and how deceitfully these large corporations conducted their campaign with lots of really mendacious advertising campaigns. The No on 37, they would pose as green. They would send things out. They sent out millions of pieces of mail saying that it was from a green organization or from a democratic organization, from a police organization, and there was nothing. It was just Monsanto and their allies. But they did so many dirty tricks. It was really interesting. And, of course, that's what's been going on anyway. And it still continues to go on with what the animal agriculture industry in general is doing. Because, the animal agriculture industry is really a huge purchaser of GMO products. I mean, cows, pigs, chickens, factory farm fish are eating genetically engineered corn and soybeans and now alfalfa and cottonseed, and these are the main genetically engineered crops are fed to animals, and it's not good for us to be eating them directly. As vegans, we obviously don't eat animal foods, but so I would really encourage everyone to be very cognizant of what you're eating when you go out to a restaurant. Even if you're careful and only buy organic foods, which I highly recommend in your own shopping, like going out to a restaurant, it's very easy to, you know, to be eating genetically engineered food. If you just order something is fried, it's usually fried in canola oil, which is genetically engineered, or soybean oil, or cottonseed oil, or corn oil. And these are all GMO. And there's direct evidence now, as you probably all know, between the gluten allergies that everybody's having, increasing enormously, and leaky gut syndrome, which in that coming from eating genetically engineered foods, which are so rampant now. When we eat genetically engineered foods, it's now understood that they specifically attack the villi, the little fingers in the intestines, where the actual uptake of nutrients into the bloodstream happens. And if they get damaged by GMO foods, more and more it causes things to go into the bloodstream that shouldn't be, and that causes inflammation and leads to many different diseases. So I think it's very important for our own health and the health of our loved ones, really the health of everyone, to understand the importance of this and not to allow corporations to get away with this, but also to be careful that we don't put ourselves in the position of eating this stuff and certainly not of buying it, but in some way supporting and buying into this really toxic system. And it was interesting because we're getting ready to have Steve come on the line with us for a little while, and he was telling me right beforehand that he's feeling a little bit under the weather for a few reasons. One, he thinks, is because of the chemtrails that are prevalent all over the world, really, especially in some certain urban areas. And I just saw, actually, a very interesting documentary on chemtrails. You know, when you look up in the sky and you see these trails going behind planes that don't dissipate like they normally should, what are called contrails, they just stay, and they've been analyzed, and they're toxic. They have aluminum and barium and strontium primarily, and it's not really known exactly why, but one of the interesting in this recent documentary was talking about why, the title was Why in the World Are They Spraying? And it was again talking about Monsanto. I couldn't believe it. And the enormous profits that are made through the manipulation of weather patterns and the toxification of soil and the need for using genetically engineered crops and certain fertilizers and things when, as a result of spraying these chemtrails, and also the futures markets. I mean, if they can drive the prices of grains up, if they can do it at will, by creating either droughts or floods, which these are, you know, weather modifications in many ways, then they can make huge amounts of money. So again, we see behind the scenes in many ways, I think, perhaps similar forces. So again, behind all of this is the idea that we are all connected at a deep level to a kind and loving, compassionate consciousness, which is our true nature, and also of the abundance of this earth, and to do what we can to be savvy, to be awake, and to be aware, and to not cooperate with the forces that would dominate and exploit and oppress not only animals, really, I think, but as we see more and more, all of us, and that there's a lot of people suffering, and we see even our good friend Steve is suffering from the result of, you know, because these chemtrails, when they come out of the sky, you know, they can really rapidly rising rates of respiratory diseases. I think now the number four killer is respiratory ailments, and it pretty much coincides in many ways with a variety of things, but one of the things it coincides with, I guess, one of them is, of course, the more GMOs, another thing is more chemtrails. So good to be aware of these things. Steve has also been working very, very hard on multiple projects. And as you all know, Veg World magazine is now in the fourth issue, September, October, November, December is coming out soon, and that's a huge, wonderful contribution I think Steve is making to the whole vegetarian vegan movement with this first online magazine. And the other thing is his new book is just coming out, which I'm hoping we can hear a little bit about. So we were thinking it would be great to go on a little bit more. We don't have a whole lot of time here, but we have some to go on a little, some more from last month, talking about some of the ways that we can bring effectively the vegan message to the world through the internet, and ways that we can do it both just gratis, or and also ways we can do it and make a living at it. And I really think that it's good to be aware that this is a movement that's growing, that a lot of people are really in need of information about how they can thrive as vegans and how they can make a transition, and that if we're longtime vegans ourselves, or even if not that long, but we understand the whole thing well, we can really, I think, be in a position to help people on many levels, not only to be healthy themselves, but to be able to help others help themselves to make this change. And that's what really, in many ways, what this whole call is about, and the whole World Peace Diet Facilitator Training, and the reason I wrote the World Peace Diet, and I think the reason we're all here together, is to support each other in finding ways that we can bring this message, live this message, and bring this message. And I think Steve is really one of the pioneers in many ways in the internet vegan movement, with Raw Vegan Radio, and all he's done with Raw Palooza, and of course the Vegan Palooza, we worked on that together. So Steve, I guess you're with us, and I'd love to maybe invite you, if you can, to give, because I think it's always helpful for people to hear these ideas, maybe a second time, or refresh everybody's memory. What do you think the internet specifically has to offer in bringing the vegan message, and what have you learned in doing this, and how do you feel about the opportunities that we have in the internet? How can people plug in? What are some of the main ways? And maybe also, before you say anything about that, just I want to invite everyone to please feel free to ask questions. Press star 2 to ask questions of Steve, or make comments, because we're hoping to make this, if possible, into a little bit more of a dialogue with all of us. So if you have any questions for Steve about bringing the vegan message through the internet, or how you can do that in your own niche, I think it would be great to hear from you. But Steve, can you respond maybe a little bit to that idea, to that question, or that whole notion that we are in the internet era, we're able to reach more people and in more ways than ever? I think you're a living example of that. If you could talk to us a little bit about what you've learned, that'd be great.
Sure. Am I coming through okay, Will?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, good. You know, with the chemtrails in my lungs, I don't know.
Right. I'm so sorry about that.
They're spraying like crazy over L.A. But basically, what we talked about last month was the different ways we can get the message out through the internet, through blogs, videos, webinars, e-books, podcasts, all these different mediums to get the message out, because we become the media. It's not like we have to go to the media. We can create our own media through these various methods. You can choose one to start and just start building on that and integrate all these other ways to do it, like we were talking about last week.
Yeah, I'd like to just underline that idea. I hope everybody really caught that. What you said, I think, is so powerful. You know, the traditional way is we buy the newspaper, we turn on the TV, you know, we're here, the media's there, we listen to what they have to say, we read what they have to say. And what you're saying is that's over. We are the media. We create the media. Any one person can build a media network that can number in the millions, really. A lot of people are doing it. And,
exactly.
And
I mean, that's what Mike Adams did. All you know, I remember Mike Adams started his. It was the Health Ranger, and then he changed to Natural News, and he became, you know, the Natural News Media. He just created that. I mean, really, the doors to creativity are just there. It's just about finding, I mean, we talked about the steps last month and finding your passion and what area in the vegan movement or outside in the environment, animal rights, whatever that passion is.
Right.
And then building from there.
Right. So it's a combination of finding what your passion is, what your interest is, and then also, I guess, what you're good at, right? I mean, what you really seem to, you know, if you're really good at speaking and talking and asking questions, or if you're more into writing, or if you're more into video or making movies of recipes, cooking classes. I mean, there's so many different. The good thing about this movement is it needs people in so many different areas, really, to bring the message.
Right, exactly. And if you're good at writing, you can do the blogging. If you're good at speaking and you just want to do a podcast, you can get that transcribed into a blog. You can really can combine the mediums, and it becomes easy to create an ebook by just interviewing someone and taking that, transcribing it, and making an ebook out of it. There's so many different ways to do it. So, I mean, if anyone on the call is serious about doing this or starting it, I'm definitely open to questions of what we can touch on or clarify from last month, or even move beyond as far as marketing, because that's a whole other part of it too, get marketing your message and getting it out there. And the internet allows to do that really for not a lot of money. I mean, there are different ways you can put money into advertising, but there's lots of free ways that you can get your message out too.
Right. Yeah, there's we were just in Salt Lake City, I think, a week before last, and I gave a lecture, and afterwards a woman came up to me, and she gave me a copy of her book. And I think this is a good example. She created her own cookbook, and it was beautiful. I mean, she took photographs of her dishes, and she you know, wrote, put the recipes together, and she can print them. Steve, you may know more about this, or maybe you don't. But anyway, there's companies online that you can print on demand. She could print, you know, if she wanted to print one book, she could print one book, or if she wanted to print 100 books, she could print 100 books, and the price is really very reasonable. And she created a website. She talked about her book, and people could order it, and the company would print one and send it to the people, so they get it was full color. I mean, every single page had a color photograph of her. Of one of her dishes. It was one of the best cookbooks I've ever seen in my life. It was really good. And she just did it herself completely. She didn't need a publisher. She just, and she can market it through groups. I mean, through creating on the internet, through basically building a buzz, working in partnership with other people and so forth. And there's so many ways that we can reach out and bless other people with a vegan message. And I think the technologies now that we have, this is just one example, I think really shows what we can do. We've had Sassy Knutson on, who was a good example of someone who's got a health coaching and a blog and a newsletter and all that. And I think it's good to just be aware of other people. There's authors that obviously write books, and then like Madeline and I travel around and give lectures and things. There's people like Colleen Patrick Boudreau, who's written books but also does blogging, does videos, and does a lot of different things. There's people who create online niche programs with radio interviews, like you've done, Steve, and other people have, or my friend, I think his name is Don. He has a Happy Cow, for example. And there's quite a few similar websites that help people to find vegan resources. And I'm sure there's a lot more. We could talk all day about those different ideas. I think it's only limited by our creativity. I have a friend actually who's a vegan, and she figured out how to make her own vegan soaps, and now she's help teaching people. She has an online course teaching people to make vegan soaps, and so people can learn to make their own vegan soap. It's really not that hard. And she's actually basically supporting herself and her daughter through teaching people to make vegan soap online, you know, all over the world. So, you know, living way out in, you know, in the jungle. She lives in Vilcabamba, Ecuador, you know, where we have a little house here too. So there's all kinds of creative ideas, and I want to encourage everyone, if you're listening, to be aware that, as Steve said last time so well, I loved how you said it last time, you didn't want to just sort of be working in sort of a cog in the machine, but to, you know, create your own life and do something you really believe in. And I guess what you found is not only is it enormously rewarding, it can also be enormously challenging as well, right? I mean, you're working really hard right now. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that, just how hard you have to work sometimes.
Sure. And by the way, that print-on-demand site, for anyone who's interested, is the one I use is Vervante. That's VERVANTE.com. They're really good. They do books, CDs, and things like that. So you can do an MP3 interview and have that made into a CD, into a box set, all kinds of things on there. So that's Vervante.com.
Vervante. Thanks. Thanks. Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I look back at this last year and I've just, you know, been very busy producing and building my business through the internet, it started with the J. Cordage School of Juicing and the program that we did together, and because that took us into the new year. And then I did the Raw Palooza event. We did the World Peace Diet Circle, Vegan Palooza. I mean, you mentioned all the things. Veg World, which came off of Vegan Palooza, it was just kind of like a magazine version of what I wanted that, of what I felt that event was.
Right.
And, you know, and my book just came out last week. So, the complete
your book came right out of your juice the blogging you did about your juice fasting that you did, right? I mean, that came right out of that. So
exactly, and that was last year. So that was like the end of November.
Yeah, right. And that's a book that was published by Penguin. I mean, it's really great to see, and it's coming out right now. You want to mention to people where they can see it, and maybe you can get some reviews too. And maybe you could.
Yeah, I could really use some reviews. That would be great. You can get it on Amazon. I think it's like $10 there. And you can even preview it. I think they've got like 15 or 20 pages you can look at right on Amazon if you just type in The Complete Idiot's Guide to Juice Fasting, co-written by Bo Rinaldi, who I don't think we've had on the circle, but I think he'd be a good guest at some point.
Oh, yeah, we'd have to have him on. Right, that's a good idea. Yeah.
So between... I mean, I was talking to Dr. Tuttle before and just saying, I didn't even know if I could motivate or anyone to do this because I'm at the end of my rope right now, because between doing a monthly magazine and your book coming out and needing to do PR and maybe radio interviews, maybe TV and all these different things that they're trying to set up and, you know, get this magazine out by December 1st, it's becoming really overwhelming. Gets to the point where you think, all right, I don't think I want to do anything today.
Wow.
It's overwhelming at times. Yeah, it really is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I was listing off all those things that I've done this year, because it's a lot, and it's a lot that I've been putting in. I don't recommend this level of productivity. I think I've kind of gone overboard with it.
Yeah, I think in a way you probably have, but on the other hand, I'm sure the animals are glad, and people, a lot of people are happy. I mean, you know, it's one of those things, though. On the other hand, you don't want to get to the point where you just can't do it anymore. So that's where I think what Judy talked about too, and I know you're aware of the importance of taking time to meditate, connect with nature, and it's. And I know also having been born myself into a newspaper family, my father started out with one newspaper, and by the time I was 13, he ran, I guess he had about 15 or 16 newspapers, and it can be, you know, really crazy when you have these deadlines that, you know, the paper has to be out, and no matter what, and so I know you're what that's like to have that kind of relentless demand on your time. So it's good, I think, Steve, obviously, to get more folks helping you and to be able to, so you're not doing quite so much yourself.
Right. We've hired, you know, a few people, and the magazine this last week, each day we've been in the top 10 top grossing magazines in Apple Newsstand under the health category. So
wow.
We're like right up there with the mainstream magazines, and for four issues in, it's just pretty incredible. I didn't think we'd get this kind of response. And I mean, people all over the world are buying it. I'm looking at all the countries that are buying the magazine. I mean, it's primarily United States, but we see people all over the world buying it, which is amazing.
Yeah. Great. Mm-hmm. It's exciting. Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, I've been writing for pretty much every issue, and find that it's got a lot of great articles, and it's something I think you need more than just Veg News. And I kept wondering, okay, who's going to do something science Veg News, and now we've got Veg World Magazine. So thank you so much, Steve, for having the vision for this. And I just want to encourage everyone who's listening. I'm sure if you have an article you'd like to write, you could contact Steve and get work together and get it out to people. It's really a great opportunity.
Right. Yeah, I'd love to hear from you. I think everyone's got my email, or you just respond to the emails we send out for the group, and
right.
I'll get that. So if you're interested, right. Just let me know. And of course, Dr. Tuttle, thank you for being part of the magazine. It means a lot.
Right. I think it's great. We have a hand up. It's our good friend Mark Straub from Cincinnati. Steve, is it okay to have a...
Oh, yeah.
Mark? Yeah. Okay, Mark.
Hello.
Hi. Good to hear your voice. You there?
Yes. Yeah, it's great to hear you too.
All right, good.
It was really wonderful to hear Judy earlier. Haven't heard her talk for a while, and she's always so special and such an embodiment of peace. So,
right.
Yeah, it's really inspiring to hear Judy again.
Yes, yeah, it was. Yeah.
And it reminded me, you were talking about Thanksgiving. So it always kind of just pops up there. Here it comes. Okay, now what do we do? So here in Cincinnati now, we celebrate Reconciliation Day instead of Thanksgiving.
Right. Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, we think it's really important for more and more people to be aware of the fact that Thanksgiving was actually founded on the slaughter of Indian tribes, and that the governor at the time, Massachusetts, declared it a day of Thanksgiving because nobody was harmed in slaughtering the Indians. And it's interesting that most people just don't know that for Indian tribes, all across the United States and Canada, that day is a day of mourning. No one that's an Indian celebrates that day. There's no food. Usually there's a lot of fasting, and it's really just a completely
yeah.
different perspective. And so we feel that it's important to share in that realization and to assist others to know, and we felt that reconciliation was a very important term and a way to heal that wound that still exists so fresh from how Indians have been treated, or any indigenous group for that matter, Native American Indians. So we're this year celebrating Reconciliation Day.
Right, so you don't even call it Thanksgiving. I mean, you say Thanksgiving, but you call it Reconciliation Day. And to reconcile, basically, I think I get the message there, to reconcile ourselves, really, not only with the Indians, but with what we did, what we as a culture have done in terms of the annihilation of entire cultures so that we could, you know, take their land and be here.
And the irony of it is, especially in relationship to this cause, that we're also creating that same exploitation and Holocaust with other beings, and particularly celebrating that day with the killing of some cows and pigs and chickens and turkeys and so forth and so on. So it's just a real gross time of year to think that we're actually celebrating the Holocaust of one with the Holocaust of another. So I think it's time to put on the brakes and go in a different direction. So,
right. Yeah, I just wrote an article, everybody. I mean, I'll tell you too, Mark. It's going to be probably come out tomorrow on One Green Planet. I was hoping to get it in your November resources, but I didn't quite make it. But I'll send out an email anyway. It's called The Vegan Spirit of Thanksgiving, and I'm just basically talking about the ironies involved of how we give thanks and how ironic that is when, you know, for the millions of animals and other humans that suffer so that we can give thanks. And to look kind of deeply into all of that, I think there's a really starting to happen more and more. It's really important, I think, for us to do that. It was great to see that, you know, Steve, you had the last issue, right, the current issue was devoted to Thanksgiving, right, into the vegan perspective on Thanksgiving.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's it's something that is really, I think, it's a great time for us. I think it's probably the time of year that vegans dread more than any other time, in the sense it's most discomforting because, you know, this video just came out. I don't know if you're all aware of it, but Mercy for Animals just released, I think, 2 days ago or so, a recent Butterball undercover investigation. Again, another one. And I just watched it this morning, the footage that they took of workers just horribly smashing turkeys, you know, throwing them around and hitting them and kicking them. And, you know, this whole, I think when people go to the store and buy turkey, or when they sit at the table and they're eating turkey, I don't think they even think they're eating an animal or buying an animal. I think it's just a thing. You know, they just get a turkey. They don't even think that it's a living being, or was a living being with feelings. That the sensitization is so vast, and yet I think for vegans it's very painful, because not only are we aware of the horrible treatment of these animals, but then very often as vegans we're put in the position of having to sit at a dinner with our friends and family who are sort of willfully not wanting to be aware of it. I mean, just acting like they don't care, and very often questioning us or making us feel that we're sort of we're doing something wrong by not eating the turkey.
I can't even be around them anymore. I can't even see my family
anymore. Right. I mean, you know exactly. It's really, the ironies abound. I wrote in my article how because it's kind of interesting that the turkey, in many ways, somebody told me actually that turkeys are in the vulture family. I mean, in a way, they look a little bit like vultures, although they're not actually, they're in the grouse family. But they're there's a sort of element about it that they're this Thanksgiving spectacle where we have a ritual feast where we're all gathered around a morbidly obese, roasted and stuffed bird that, in a way, it looks like it could be of the vulture family, and everyone gathers around, in many ways, like vultures, to get their share of the carcass, and in many ways contributing to their own obesity in the process, you know. And so, because we do, in many ways, eat like vultures, in the sense that we don't do the killing ourselves, we let somebody else do it, and then we're the scavengers that come in and eat it later. And it's already they've been long dead, and we don't like to think of ourselves as vultures, but in a very, very true sense, I think in our culture we act that way, and in the sense of just eating rotting flesh, and we call it aged beef or something like that to market it. But I think for vegans this is a hard time of year, because it's very often much more immediate, and so I think it, in many ways it takes all of our skill to be able to appropriately with the situation. And I think both of you, you know, Steve, by, you know, creating this Edgeworld magazine and allowing people to understand that there's these wonderful, healthy vegan alternatives, and Mark with Reconciliation Day, you know, it's great to have creative responses to this absurdity, this insanity that we're really confronted with when we wake up to what's really going on.
Well, I think it's like we were talking about earlier with Judy, to bring a spiritual message into it. And
right.
For us, that in so many Eastern traditions, the whole concept of Maya or the illusion, and this is the perfect example, like you were saying, this magical thinking that takes place where people are sitting down and they just don't even realize they're eating another being, and they're celebrating they murder another being and celebrate that of the slaughter of other of a whole culture of humans, and that is the illusion. And so how are people really able to have a peaceful, calm, spiritual life when they're living this illusion of exploitation and violence and actually celebrating it and have really no connection with it in their own reality. It's just totally an illusion. So there's just no possibility for them to have a peaceful life. And we wonder why the divorce rate is so high and the crime rate is so high. Well, for the culture that's based in such illusion and is systematic violence that's going on and our entire history is based on it, and what other possibility might exist? So we really see things like Reconciliation Day and all the work that is going on here as a way to realize that there's a new spirituality that's being born that really has never existed. One of true compassion and one true empathy.
Right, exactly. I think that's the beautiful thing about the vegan movement, is that the animals can't speak for themselves and we speak on their behalf. And so it's not a movement based on getting something for ourselves. It's really based on realizing that we're all in this together and blessing others who can't defend themselves. And realize that's the only way to live a life of, as you're saying, of peace and justice and freedom, where we don't have the devastation of crime and divorce and breakdown of families and disease and so forth, comes from healthy, compassionate and kind families and communities, and starts really with our plates, with our food, our most powerful, primary, fundamental connection with nature and with our culture and with the larger order. It's the one thing that people resist looking at because it is the real thing. I mean, it's the real connection. And so as we all know, probably if you're on this call, you're well experienced it probably many times, how quickly people would like to switch the subject when we start to talk about this. And I think especially around Thanksgiving, I remember before my family went all vegan, we had some times, but I'm so glad that they eventually did. Yeah. Well, great, Mark. Thanks so much for joining us. Do you have anything else you want to share before?
A few things, actually. I'd like to mention, I know you were talking earlier with Judy about the election a little bit, and I just would like to mention that it's just important for people to know these things. Sometimes they kind of get slipped under the table, so to speak. Since 2007, the United States has not allowed slaughterhouses for horses. Basically, they didn't pass a law banning them. Congress took away funding from the Department of Agriculture so that there were no inspectors, so they couldn't inspect the slaughterhouses for horses. There's no money in the budget for that, so they effectively had to shut down. And this past year, President Obama signed a bill that put that funding back in place. And so there are companies now that are looking at business plans. They have their business plans online, on videos, and they're looking at operating in small towns, and of course they're using the whole job situation to get people to get behind them, because they're promising that there'll be new jobs in a little town somewhere out in the middle of nowhere where most people won't know about it. And the one company's marketing plan is even to go beyond marketing horse body parts to Europe and Asia, which is where the largest market is now. Their marketing plan is actually to find a way to market horse body parts to the United States. So it's
right.
It's just really something to be aware of, and it's very two steps forward, and then we take one big giant step backwards. So
yeah.
But on another note, we are still basking in the glow of the Jubilee this past year, which happened last month, and that was really wonderful. We're already working on next year's Jubilee, and the Pollination Project is coming along just fine, and so is Becoming the Peace. So I just want to keep those things on everyone's radar, especially Becoming the Peace, because I know you spoke about last month's call, which I missed, about Right Livelihood. And so those facilitator positions in Becoming the Peace will be becoming available this year, or actually in 2013. So just want to keep that, keep everybody abreast of what's happening with that.
Great, Mark. Thanks for reminding us about that. Everybody, if you're interested in finding out, there's this wonderful program that's being funded. It's called Becoming the Peace. We've talked about it, and it's really bringing the vegan message into communities all over the country, and there's going to be a need for several people to do this, to facilitate, to be trained facilitators. So what should they do, Mark, if they're interested? Should they contact you, or is there a place, a website they can go to?
They can go to the website, the World Peace
Pollination
Yoga website.
Oh, World Peace Yoga website.
For Becoming the Peace, yeah. And just give us a message and we'll get back. And if they're interested in a grant, the $1,000 a day grant program, they can either go to the Pollination Project or they can go to World Peace Earth, our website. If you're on
right.
this, people that are on this call, I suggest that they go to World Peace Earth, because they'll get direct attention from us, and then we can talk about it, and I can talk about it with Will, especially if someone on the call or their project that is familiar to you, Will, then that way they'll be better served. So,
right.
So,
yeah, it's good to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. These definitely are available, the $1,000 mini grants, and we want to make sure everybody is aware of that. If you have a project that would help spread the message, we have funding through, again, a generous vegan donor. So, great. All right. Well, thanks, Mark. It's been great to have you with us. I wanted to continue on a little bit with more, actually, with Steve. So, thanks for joining us. Thanks for letting us know about all that. It's great.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Okay. Talk to you later. Thanks. Steve, and we were also talking about your many different things you've been doing to help bring the vegan message to the world through the internet. Is there anything else you'd like to say about that? I'm not sure if we can continue that thread, but if you can.
No, I think we covered it. If anyone wants to see the magazine, you can go to Facebook and just type in Veg World Magazine. Actually, you can go direct to that page at vegworldfans.com, and we've got a free sample of issue 2. Will's in there and lots of other people you guys love and admire, so check it out there.
Wow. That's a real labor of love. It's enormous. How many pages are you publishing each month, roughly, Steve?
They average about 90 pages. And
I mean, that's huge, 90 pages.
Yeah.
90 full-color pages with articles, with interviews, with videos, with audios, with recipes. You know, it's a gigantic undertaking, and you know, I'm really amazed at how well you've done with this, Steve. And I do hope also if anyone is interested, if you're still looking for people, Steve, to help out, you know, is that something you want people to contact you or not?
Yeah, just go ahead and email me and, you know, let me know what you'd like to contribute. We include videos and articles, so.
Right. And, Steve, maybe you want to say a few words about, because I think this might be perhaps interesting, if people do some kind of vegan publication online, maybe like a blog or an audio a podcast of some kind or a video, isn't there more and more possibilities to get financial support through the growing number of vegan businesses that want to advertise to the kinds of people who will be reading your blog or who will be listening to your podcast? Can you say something about that?
Exactly, yeah. There definitely is opportunity for that. We've had sponsors on my podcast. We've had sponsors on every event I've done online, from Rawpalooza to Veganpalooza. We've had sponsors. We have sponsors in Veg World Magazine and a member of the Circle. I don't think she's on the call tonight, but she's helping us with sales for that too. So whatever it is you build online, you know, once you attract an audience, getting your message out about veganism and vegan life or whatever area of it, if it's animal rights or whatever, once you've got an audience, then there's lots of companies out there that are interested in advertising to your audience to get their message across. They're looking for more ways to do this besides traditional TV, with things like DVR and people just skipping over commercials at this point. They're looking for ways like this to market their message, and there's more and more vegan companies out there. So Daya,
right,
things like that, Health Force Nutrition is a big sponsor of ours, and they're always looking to get their word out. And yeah, it's really been going well.
Yeah, that's a very important to understand that there's there's quite a few businesses that really need us in a sense to help. I mean, they're selling vegan products to vegans, and the way the whole system works is they like to be able to help get their message out that they have a product like whatever it is, vegan cheese, or vegan superfoods, or vegan cosmetics, or you know, various tofurkey, all kinds of things, and so to just, you know, support them, support each other. I think more and more what we're looking at is actually creating a whole alternative economy, a vegan economy, where if I want to get something done, I'd like to get it done by a fellow vegan and pay them, you know, and we can, as more and more people go vegan, we can do this, I think, more and more effectively, and so there's lots of ways to build on this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, the intention of Veg World Magazine is to educate the mainstream and hope, you know, inspire them that this
right.
is the best way to live. And, I mean, the irony is that our magazine has been, like, right next to the Paleo magazine, which is, like,
wow.
the hottest thing right now, that crazy primitive diet of raw meat. And, I mean, so we're really trying to get the message out, though, of sanity, the sane message.
Right. I know. It is, like Judy said, it's a spiritual battle. And there's definitely forces that are promoting cruelty and violence and devastation, unfortunately. So it's really great to be able to brainstorm like this. Well, Steve, is there anything else? I'd like to still wanted to talk to try to get Lily on, maybe say, and we also did have a question hand raised earlier from Ann Arbor. What do you think, Steve?
Was there a hand?
Yeah, there was a hand from Rebecca.
Let me see if she's still. Rebecca, did you have a question?
Are you there?
Yeah,
Ann?
We're here. We can hear you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hi.
It was kind of a good call tonight because it touched on a lot of things that are going on in my life right now.
Uh-huh.
I really love the part with Judy. and hearing her voice after reading her emails is really nice to hear. But I know you guys know, you probably have heard about Bill and Lou and the college
in
Vermont.
Oh, that's a whole other thing.
And that's kind of, you know, what she was talking about with the elephants is kind of where we are with that now, too.
Right.
All the people who were involved in that, it's been very frustrating. And and I've just kind of got to the point where I need to step back on that, too, and figure out how I could be more effective in another way. But but it is kind of like beating your head against the wall talking to some people. And then vegan soap. I just made my first batch of vegan soap yesterday.
No kidding. Wow.
No. So that was kind of cool, too. And then there was something I was going to ask, but every time I put my hand up, then, you know, we go on to something else and I forget. But I did want to tell you that there's a group now in Ann Arbor that's an offshoot of Veg Michigan, and we are planning a Veg Week for Ann Arbor next year. And
Do you know when it's going to be around?
It's going to be April. I think it's April 22nd through the 29th. I guess a question I had, although I'm sure I can answer it myself by looking at the website, is I did want to know whether there were still grants available and if that would be applicable to something like this that's more a group thing and already has the, it's already under the aegis of Veg Michigan, but
no, I think that would definitely be eligible for a grant. And, you know, you could send me an email also if you'd like, and because I'm an official facilitator of these grants.
Okay.
And you know, you would write the proposal. It's pretty simple, but you could certainly, I think, apply for a grant for that because that's you know, I don't make the decisions, but it sounds to me like it would be a worthy cause, a worthy project
to
bring the
message
to the people. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a veg pledge, and then we're trying to get restaurants in the area to have special vegan dishes for the week and have some speakers coming. And actually, if anybody knows of a good environmentalist that would maybe want to speak or do some kind of presentation.
A vegan environmentalist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's funny how there's so few of those.
We got the health aspect, and we have the animal aspect, hopefully. I think Melanie Joy is coming. So we get a bunch of things going on with there. But, I think that's all I had to say. I think there was something else, but I can't remember what it was, so whatever.
Right. Well, great. Well, that sounds like you're doing a lot of excellent work there in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I remember what a great job you did with our the event we did not too long ago. Richard Openlander is a vegan who has written a book that goes in depth into the environmental impacts of eating animal-based foods, and you might want to check to see if he's available, perhaps.
Is he in Michigan?
Is he what?
Is he in Michigan?
I don't think so. I'm not sure where he's based out of, but just a thought. You know,
Openlander?
Richard Openlander, yeah.
Openlander, okay. I'll check that out. Yeah, I was thinking there's probably somebody at the university, too, but I don't know. I haven't heard of anybody, so I'll have to go do some research on that.
Right.
I just thought you might have a few names to pull out of the hat.
Right. Yeah, it's an important, definitely an important part of the whole thing. If I think of somebody, I'll let you know.
Okay. Oh, great.
Great. Well, thanks, Rebecca. Good to hear your voice.
Yep.
We have, we have also, just to mention, we have our friends John and Christine up in Vancouver. If you've been looking a little bit into the forums, they're going to be speaking, and they've put together what I think is a really excellent presentation on the World Peace Diet that they're going to be presenting. It's the, I'm just looking it up right now, on the Animal Fair, which is November 17th. So that's, wow, that's like 2 days. Promoting the World Peace Diet. And they just sent them a bunch of books. So they're going to be actually selling books and getting the World Peace Diet message out to the mainstream people that are attending. So, yeah, check out the community forum. It's a really great outline of their presentation, really a wonderful outline of the main points you're going to be discussing and how they can bring the vegan message to the folks there at this animal fair. So congratulations to John and Christine. Looking forward to hearing how that goes. And we also have on the phone with us here our friend Lily Macy from Northern California. And I was wondering, it's getting a little bit late here, but it would be great. I'm hoping to maybe we could spend a few minutes hearing from Lily before we close our time. Steve, does that sound okay with you at this point? Because we've been going out for an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah, we're okay here.
We're good?
Yeah,
okay.
We got you.
Great. Okay.
We got you.
Yeah, so Lily, are you with us?
I feel small among giants. But I'm here. Judy, Steve, Mark, all of you, and of course Will. Well, you know, we were talking about spirituality and passion and what is your passion. I didn't know truly what my passion was. I thought I knew. But when I read the World Peace Diet 6 years ago, that became my passion and my life's work. And what I do is, every single day, I'm like a rocket that is pointed toward a goal. And I, every day, I've already programmed this rocket that someone is going to hear about the World Peace Diet. Now, I'm very low tech. I didn't even have electricity here a few years ago. But I'm thinking of going on the internet as well. But I do, I'm quite well spoken. And what I do is I meet people where they are, wherever they are, and I do talk to a lot of people on the phone, but it's even people that have known me a long time. For instance, my husband has a stockbroker that knows we're vegan and kind of asked us what we were doing for Thanksgiving. Well, we do a nightly reading of the World Peace Diet every single night, at least three paragraphs. We're on our third reading. I can now, in my going into my seventh year of being a vegan, it's very hard for me to read more than two or three paragraphs without just feeling like I don't want to be here anymore. And so this stockbroker asked us what we're doing for Thanksgiving, and I told him, I said, we are planning to have a memorial, and it fit right in with what Mark was talking about. I put on Requiem music all day long, and we do serve a beautiful vegan meal, and I wear black, and now that I know the true story totally, it will be for the poor Indians as well. But of course, that's part of what Will talks about. The World Peace Diet is all about what people do to animals, they do to each other. So, you know, that's been going on for centuries, and we're fighting against the whole world of indifference, really, here. And this stockbroker is a perfect example of someone who was indifferent until I found the button to press. And I found the button because I'm studying slowly the World Peace Diet, literally sentence by sentence. It is my passion. It's the only reason I want to be here. It's because of the World Peace Diet. Otherwise, I don't even want to be here anymore. I don't want to live in this bloodbath anymore. So I found what got his attention, and this was in the chapter Profiting from Destruction, and I started to tell him about the water and the oil. And, of course, he's a stockbroker, and he could relate to that. And I had read him other things. I had read him other things, because I'm reading him every time we talk to him, and I'm starting to do that with anybody who calls. I'll say, listen to this, and they're stuck. I mean, they can hang up on me, but I'll say, listen to this, and whatever part I happen to be reading of the World Peace Diet is pertinent. Well, this very stockbroker got online on the phone with me and ordered a copy of the World Peace Diet in my presence on the phone, and I thought that was a big, huge win because, this is my passion. And when a person is living their passion, it's irresistible. People want it. People want what I have, and they don't even know they want it. And I'm an older person. I'm in my 60s, and people say, "What's your secret? You look wonderful." Well, I'm making up cards I'm going to say, I'll hand them this card, and it'll say, "I'm on the World Peace Diet," and then it'll have the website. Wow. Anything I can think of, and this is really low tech. Now, I'm going to get on the internet. I'm going to get it all hooked up with satellite and everything here eventually. But this is just a little bit of what I do. All of my animals have been vegan ever since about the first month of me being vegan. I use evolution diet. I will talk to the person who actually put that wonderful diet together, Eric Wiseman, and maybe he can be a part of Steve's magazine. I'm so excited to be involved in this, because if I were not and I knew about all of this that was happening, I would not want to live. Thank God I still can have a voice. Thank God it's not totally against the law to be passionate about being vegan. So that's just a little of what I do, and I do a little bit every single day. If I've done a little activism every day, I feel like my day has been a good day. It's been worthwhile. So
right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the turkey. Will, you changed my life. At first, I thought you ruined it because I couldn't stand being so depressed. But the only way I can fight the depression is with the spiritual energy that I derive from spreading the message of
the
diet.
Right, exactly. Wow. Thanks, Lily. Thanks so much. I know you and Jim are living off the grid, way up in Humboldt County? No, Mendocino County.
Humboldt.
Oh, you're in Humboldt County. And you're getting your energy from the sun, and everything comes from batteries, and it's just really admirable to see people of your education and stature who are living your values and who are committed to making the world a better place on a very deep level just every day. And I'm so glad that you were able to get on the call with us here. And,
well, thank you. I certainly didn't feel like I had anything to say with all these giants, but I'm this little tiny mouse living here in my little cabin doing the best I can. And, boy, if everybody did that, it would be a different world.
That's really true. That's really true. And you've got, besides you and Jim, the dogs and cats and all the people. I always recommend if anyone has a chance to call Lily, and if she's not, doesn't pick up the phone, she has an answering machine message that really also tells the message. And I think that there's so many things we can do that we don't sometimes think of, and working every day to bring the message in some way. I think that's just a lofty goal. Sometimes we think that we're not making any progress if we don't have some kind of a website that's getting 10,000 hits or something like that. But I think if we can just touch one person in an interaction when we're at a store or at a bank or talking to somebody on the phone and help them to question the indoctrination of eating animal foods, we've helped them enormously, and that person will probably be able to help many people more. So never doubt that any effort that we make is important. I think it really all helps.
Well, Will, I just want to say I call my home a sanctuary for the World Peace Diet. And as you know, I have a lot of people calling me because they know that I'm vegan, and I do give them free vegan coaching. And I talk to them. But the response I get, I try not to answer my phone because I want people to hear the message. And it says that, it's the vegan home of Jim and Lily. and various other beings, a sanctuary for the World Peace Diet. And I have heard people go, wow, a sanctuary for the World Peace Diet. I mean, it gets their attention. And every single vegan home, every single vegan home can be, you don't have to be living on acreage like I do. Every single vegan home is a sanctuary for the World Peace Diet.
Mm-hmm. Right. Beautiful. Thank you so much, and so much. Really appreciate you being with us. I want to thank everyone tonight for being on the call. I know it's getting late, especially if you're in the Eastern time zone. So we shouldn't really go any longer than this. And so I guess we'll begin to wrap it up. So next month, obviously, I'm just going to quickly check here if there's any questions. Doesn't look like you. Okay, good. So I want to really thank our two wonderful guests, Steve, of course, who really with some great information, and Judy, also inspiring and helpful information and presence. And it was great to hear from Mark and Lily and Rebecca, everyone. And so we're going to be meeting again on Thursday, December 20th. That's the third Sunday, so it's right in the Christmas season. I'll send out an email with my article about the vegan spirit of Thanksgiving. I think it's really also important to remember that there's an ancient ritual, an ancient tradition of autumn harvest festivals. And I think that's another one of the great ironies of Thanksgiving is the fact that we celebrate Thanksgiving with a turkey, but for thousands of years, really, it was the autumnal festival, harvest festival, which is really what Thanksgiving is. It was all about plant-based foods. It was, you know, Thanksgiving for the abundance of the earth and bringing forth vegetables and the fruits and the grains that really has primarily sustained everyone. So let's see. Steve just sent me a message by Skype, the reference page for lunch. You mean the resources? The resource, yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, Steve has put into your box the resources for November. I work all month on this, everybody, so please check it out for you. I've got a whole bunch of articles that I think are showing what's been happening this past month in the world of veganism and vegan education, and as Rebecca was saying, there's quite a bit. So I have several articles on Bill and Lou. As you probably are all aware, these are two oxen at Green Mountain College in Vermont who worked for, I can't remember what, 10 or 12 years, faithfully pulling plows, and now they want to slaughter them for meat for the students. And one of the oxen, Lou, was just suddenly in the middle of the night euthanized, so they say. I mean, according, you know, we think that he may have just been taken out and slaughtered. Incredibly interesting. I mean, I think one of the most important things with this is it shows how animal agriculture is animal agriculture, whether it's a small local free-range, grass-fed operation or a massive industrialized killing operation, the animals absolutely don't matter. You kill them, and you kill them however you want, and as soon as they stop making you money and helping you, then you just kill them, and you use them. They're exploited totally. So anyone who starts with, you know, with this humane meat thing, you know, I think it's so clear that it's completely bogus. And these kinds of things make it very obvious. So there's some great, you know, just a lot of great articles, again, that are coming out. And I think especially it's good to see more and more positive articles about vegan Thanksgiving. I point out in my article that I just sent off today that I'll just read this one paragraph. There are countless alternatives to the dead bird in the center of the table. As Dr. Neil Barnard has pointed out, the three sisters that Native American people venerated and cultivated as staple crops, corn, beans, and squash, make a terrific foundation for sumptuous feasts of gratitude. Stuffed pumpkins, nut loaves, tofurkies, vegetable, and sweet potato dishes an even completely raw Thanksgiving feast of marinated eggplant and zucchini pasta are all in alignment with our yearning for compassionate and sustainable traditions. Vegan Thanksgiving meals are booming. In Raleigh, North Carolina now, for example, there are over 800 people gathering for their annual vegan Thanksgiving dinner, and this tradition is growing in other communities throughout North America as well. Also, one of the great things for Madeline and I as we've traveled throughout North America over the past 17 years is finding vegan Thanksgivings that are done, you know, community-based potlucks usually. And we have found them everywhere. All parts of the United States. We'll be going to one here in Santa Rosa, California, on Thanksgiving, bringing our vegan potluck. And so please continue with your efforts. Don't ever hesitate to ask any questions if you have any, either technical questions or any other questions. Don't forget that we do have our pages here, the community forums, and we have some new people from England, from other places that are joining us, and it's always good, I think, to welcome them and to continue our conversations there. And I want to, of course, remind everybody about the fact that we have these other, the Pollination Project and quite a few other things, and also that Steve's projects, his book, is just coming out. It would be great to leave a review for his book if you can, and to check out Veg World Magazine, and that we have our ongoing, besides the study forums, we have our, the work that we're doing as we travel. So, again, if you'd like Madeline and I to come to your area, just let us know, and stay in touch about what you're doing in your community, if there's anything that you think would be helpful for other people to be aware of, either in your community or online. This is a wonderful opportunity and forum for us to share our ideas together. So I'm going to, I guess, begin to wrap up the call here. I don't see anybody raising their hand for any last-minute comments or suggestions or questions. So thanks again for joining us. And as we go forth into this Thanksgiving season, I know that for some of us, this is a, I think really for all of us, it's a challenging time. Just knowing the level of violence towards animals. There's this wonderful poem by Shel Silverstein that you've all heard me probably recite. Maybe I'll just close with this poem since it's so apropos, I think, to the Thanksgiving season. And it's called Point of View, and it goes like this. Thanksgiving dinners, sad and thankless. Christmas dinners, dark and blue. When you stop and try to see it from a turkey's point of view. Sunday dinner isn't sunny. Easter feasts are just bad luck. When you see it from the viewpoint of a chicken or a duck. Oh, how I once loved tuna salad, steak and lobster, lamb chops too. Till I stopped and looked at dinner from the dinner's point of view. So that's really a wonderful poem, I think, by Shel Silverstein. We do have it online. If you want to find it there, just go to circleofcompassion.org and click on our on prayers and scroll down a little ways. You'll find it there. And I think that really sums up in many ways what this is all about. It's about stopping, about disconnecting in some ways from the cultural program, reconnecting with our own natural wisdom and intelligence, and supporting each other in the transition and the transformation, not only of our own lives, but of our shared cultural life together, that we can truly transform our culture, that there really is nothing stopping us except the inertia of an ancient, of an outmoded, obsolete, way of looking at the world and a way of eating, really, is underlying the whole thing. And that as more and more of us awaken, we can really light each other's candles and spread the light of wisdom and compassion and caring to touch more and more people. And I think this evening has been wonderful to share, to hear about what's actually happening in our communities and the progress that's being made. So let's go forth and let our efforts multiply this month, and we'll look forward to our next call, which will be right before Christmas, of course. But know that there are lots of positive changes happening, and that the forces that are really in, seem to be in control in many ways are losing control, that the love that shines in our hearts is the irresistible power. And as we do, as Lily was saying, really just have that intention in our hearts in the morning when we get up, that today is another wonderful day to grow in wisdom and understanding and to bring and bear witness to a message of kindness and compassion and to bless others with that message every day and find new ways to do that, that we will find doors opening. We will find sometimes perhaps like Steve where we got more on our plate than we know what to do with, but that in the end, remember, life really passes quickly, and so at the moment when we pass into the next life, we realize and look back on this life, we have lived in a way to make a better world, especially for those who are the most vulnerable. It's an honor to be working in this way together. My love to all of you from my heart, and my wonderful wife, Madeline, sends her love also. And have a great week. Thanks again, Steve, and thanks again, everyone. God bless you, and we'll look forward to next time. Thank you.